Good evening. This is Life Rattle, your story show, and I'm your host, Virginia Ashbery. Tonight, Life Rattle number 1368 presents two stories from longtime Life Rattle writer and former host of this show, Victoria Martinez. Victoria Martinez was born in Manila, the capital of the Philippines, in 1953. After college, she left Manila and spent 2 years traveling and working around Belgium and Luxembourg before landing a job with an oil company in Oman, where she worked for 3 years. Martinez then came to Toronto in 1988. She currently works for a law firm in Toronto. Victoria Martinez has written and continues to write stories of her life in the Philippines. Martinez's narrators, whether a feisty, bright young girl who risks her father's temper when she sneaks into the attic to feed her reading habit, or a mature woman cherishing her early memories of her mother, reveal shrewd, complex, and unsentimental observations to present a varied and full picture of family life in the Philippines in the 1950s and 60s. Let's listen now as Victoria Martinez reads her stories on Life Rattle. And you're listening to Life Rattle from Toronto, Ontario. And please remember that stories on Life Rattle often contain situations and language that some listeners may find offensive.
Babe Ruth by Victoria Martinez. Bottom of the ninth inning. The batter swung and missed. Strike two. The team needed a single to drive home the runner on third base and tie the game. A home run would end the game. The crowd roared and cheered. Babe Ruth, Babe Ruth, Babe Ruth. She'll do it, she'll do it, my father said to his cousin, Uncle Rizzo. If she doesn't, she'll get that run in. Come on, Irma, my father shouted. Come on, Babe Ruth, the crowd egged on. I sat on my father's shoulders as we watched the game on that damp November night in 1958. My older brother stood on the roof of a parked car, biting his fingernails. Community women's baseball became popular in Manila after the Second World War and the death of Babe Ruth. The people of San Roque District dubbed Irma Babe Ruth because of her plumpness and because she had hit winning home runs 4 games in a row. That night, the local community team, composed of local lesbian women, except for Irma, played the visiting American team, composed of American Navy servicemen's wives from Subic Naval Base. Babe Ruth, Babe Ruth, the chant grew louder. The pitcher released the ball. Irma swung. We heard a crack. The catcher lifted her face mask as she stood and looked up into the dark night sky. The pitcher, a tall, burly-looking American woman, stomped on the mound after she lost sight of the ball in the bright stadium lights. The outfielders ran back and forth, shouting, trying to find the ball. The center fielder charged toward the infield. The ball dropped a few yards behind her and rolled to a stop on the grassy ground. The other outfielders scrambled to get the ball and bumped into each other. The runner on third tagged and scored. The center outfielder, tall and lanky with braided blonde hair, regained her composure, ran back, scooped the ball, and threw it at the shortstop, who missed it as she watched Emma pass by her and round third base. The burly-looking pitcher recovered the ball and grinned as she threw it home. Irma was caught. The catcher positioned her arms to receive the throw from the pitcher, at the same time watching Irma. Irma dove and slid head first, her arms outstretched, her skirt blown back, exposing her creamy white thighs and her white bloomers. The crowd cheered even louder. The ball dropped from the catcher's glove. The umpire, a young American soldier, ruled safe. Home run. The local men whistled and cheered. They savored the moment as they watched the American team lose. They also savored the sight of exposed thighs when the players ran or slid on the dirt. They especially liked watching the American women players. Many Filipino men have a preference for fair-skinned women. Irma, born to parents who were both half Spanish and half Filipino, inherited more Spanish blood than Filipino, which accounted for her fair skin. After the game, the American players shook Irma's hand. The American team's manager handed her a box of Babe Ruth candies. Irma gave the candies to her teammates and collected her 5 pesos from her team manager. Then she came over to my father and handed him the 5 pesos. "Let's go home," she said. Irma was my mother. My father allowed my mother to play with her 2 lesbian sisters, Aunt Nena and Aunt Lena, for the local community team because she got paid 5 pesos, equivalent to $5. On our way home, we passed by a carinderia, a small restaurant on the side of the road. My father ordered 2 bottles of Coca-Cola, a bottle of beer, and a platter of noodles, which we ate when we got home. For dessert, we had a bar of Babe Ruth candy. "When is the next game?" my father asked. "Next month on the 5th," my mother replied. "Will you play again?" my brother asked her. "I don't know," she said, then looked at my father and asked, "Will you let me?" "If they pay you again, okay. If not, just stay home." His mouth twisted into a crooked expression. "I don't really like it when you slide and those son of a bitch men whistle at you." He gulped his beer down and banged the bottle on the table. My mother said nothing. Someone knocked at the door. Aunt Nena, my mother's eldest sister, came by, accompanied by her girlfriend's Aunt Sixta, to tell my father about the team's next game. "You got to pay her more. She won 5 games for you now," my father said. "Okay, I'll tell the manager to pay her 7 pesos, Aunt Nena replied. 8, my father said without looking at Aunt Nena. Aunt Nena rolled her eyes. My mother shrugged her shoulders as she smiled at Aunt Nena. "Okay, I'll tell the manager." On December 5, 1958, the American team came back to defeat the local community team. Irma stood on the sideline behind home plate, cheering for Aunt Nena and Aunt Lena. The day before, she found out she was pregnant with my sister.
That was Babe Ruth, written and read by Victoria Martinez. Let's hear her second story now.
$50 a Night by Victoria Martinez. I watch my mother's plump figure become tiny in my vision as she reaches the street corner. A jeepney stops and she boards it. I wait for the jeepney to disappear before I run back to the house. I quietly close the door behind me and carefully draw the sheer window curtains. I peek through a small gap in the wall and see Mrs. Lily out of one of the neighbors, looking towards our house from her second-floor bedroom window. In 1961, like other neighborhoods in Manila at the time, there is an unspoken agreement among the neighbors to look after one another's children when the parents are away. "Vicky," Mrs. Lily calls. It is 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and everyone in our little cluster of 5 houses knows that I didn't go to school today. Yesterday, I fell off a tree at school, and this morning, I woke up with a high fever. The old man at the end of the road says I must have strained a joint. He is the village doctor, although everyone knows he can't even read. After he had put some oil and leaves on my back, he told my mother I should stay home and rest. I feel better now, but I like the attention my mother gives me whenever I get sick. A full bottle of orange soda, a whole packet of saltine crackers, bananas, which normally I would share with my brother and two sisters. I run to the window and stick my head out. "I'll be doing my homework upstairs, Mrs. Lily," I call out. She nods and disappears. Of course I'm lying. What I plan to do is go up the gap between the ceiling and the galvanized iron roof of our house. For several nights, I woke up to the sound of tearing papers. The sound only stopped when my father threw something at the ceiling, then resumed after a few minutes. Whenever I asked my mother what those papers in the ceiling are, she always replied, "Nothing." But I know there are books and papers up in that space. I saw my father place them there several weeks ago. The mice had been tearing at them. My older brother and I love to read. We never get newspapers or magazines at home. My father says they are for rich people only. We need to buy food and clothes with the money he earns. The only books I get to read are my school books. Sometimes I read my brother's textbooks, but he does not like to lend them to me. We fight all the time because he is selfish and I am insistent. At 7 years old, I have tired of reading my school primer, which I have been reading since I was four. The Boy Jack, the Girl Jane, and a Dog Spot bore me. I am in grade two, but I am way ahead of most pupils in English reading. My teacher, Mrs. Miranda, even lets me tutor my classmates. Still, I think it is not fair that the mice destroy all those papers before I can have the chance to read them. So today, having been left by myself at home, I plan to do a lot of fast reading. My whole family sleeps on the upper floor of our house. A quarter of the floor is enclosed and serves as my parents' bedroom. This small bedroom has a ceiling. The crawl space above it is where the papers are stored, where the little sound of tearing papers emanates from every night. Just outside the door of my parents' bedroom, against the wall, we pile our mats, mosquito nets, pillows, and blankets when not in use during the day. I drag two dining room chairs from downstairs. I stack them one atop the other. I climb the pile of pillows and blankets to get to the top of the second chair. My stomach feels queasy as I realize how high up I am from the floor. The wobbly chairs almost crush my resolve. As I grab hold of an overhead beam, the top chair falls. It knocks off the stack of pillows and blankets, landing on top of them, making a dull thud. My legs dangle against the wall of my parents' bedroom. On the opposite side of the room, a lizard perches on the wall, a dead baby cockroach in its mouth. I hate lizards, but right now I wish I was one. I try to climb like the lizard. Although my feet slide and twice, I almost lose my hold on the beam. But I won't let go, even though I start to feel weak. As I press my feet against the wall, I push my body up. I see the stack of magazines at the far end of the crawl space. Freshly energized at the sight and thought of books to read, I grab another beam, anchor one foot on another, and make it to the top of the ceiling. I crawl on my stomach on the dusty ceiling, weaving through thick cobwebs, dead roaches, cold lizards, and shredded like pieces of papers. I take great care not to touch the electric wiring or anything touching them. Some parts of the wires are exposed. The mice have bitten at them, stripping away the coverings. My excitement grows as I approach the stack of magazines. I crawl much faster now, the thick dust getting in my nose. I try to stifle a sneeze. I get to read real books, I'm thinking. They should be behind the magazines. I pull out one. The cover has been ripped off, and after a few pages of advertisements for Pall Mall and Camel cigarettes and pointy brassieres, I come upon a smiling picture of a beautiful woman photographed to the waist. She has very white hair, very red lips, very long dark lashes and dreamy eyes, her breasts exposed. Below the page, across her one pink nipple, reads the caption, Marilyn Monroe. I turn the page and the next picture shocks my seven-year-old mind. Another woman, not as blonde and not as beautiful as Marilyn Monroe, but also naked, is embracing a man whose tongue sticks out, touching her breasts. Yuck! I say loudly and carelessly toss the magazine aside. The magazine's corner lands on an exposed wiring. The wires touch lightly and briefly produce a small spark. I retrieve the magazine quickly, holding my breath, my heart racing. I lie still, staring at the wires, but nothing happens. Two mice run across the stack as I move more magazines. Just then, behind the magazines, I see three small pocketbooks. I stretch my arm forward to reach them. Books! Real books! I exclaim as I hold them in my hands. The title of the first book, still fairly new, reads The Lonely Passion of Judith Hearne. Below is the name Brianne Moore. I remember the rare time that my father beat my brother just a few months ago. He is my father's favorite, but my brother had sneaked the book from my father's drawer. He got caught. This is that dirty book my father talked about then. I remember the cover. I tossed it to the back. The frayed corners of the second book indicate it has been read too many times. The title reads Gone with the Wind. I flip the pages. The book is too thick and the print is too small. I toss it back with a Brianne Moore book. The third book is titled $50 a Night. It is a small book and the print is just right. I read the words New York City, Police, Beatnik, Oldest Profession. Must be a story about a cook or a laundry woman. Those professions have to be really old. Surely this is not a forbidden book. I wonder why my parents do not want us to read it. I carefully place the book inside my blouse. I crawl back, feet first. Another small lizard wanders about in the distance, eyes me, and starts to creep towards me. I shoo it away. I hate lizards. I hate roaches and mice. These thoughts run through my mind as I crawl back, my feet dangling against the wall. As I slide down, I glance outside through the window. My father. He's home early. The scowl on his face indicates problem. Maybe he is sick or he has no work again. I jump the 6 feet or so and land with a loud thud on the wooden floor. I hear the door downstairs opening. Then my father shouts, "What's that? Who's up there?" I quickly arrange the pile of pillows and blankets. I put the little book inside the case of my pillow. I rub another pillow against my dress and hair to get rid of the dust. Then I drag the chairs to the window. As I place the second chair on top of the first one, I turn around. My father's imposing 6-foot frame looms at the doorway. "What are you doing?" he shouts, his voice booming in my ear. "Look, father," I tried to stay calm, pointing to the top of the windowsill. I'm going to get that spider. He walks towards me and looks at me with his penetrating eyes. Then he looks up at the spider web, the big fat spider sitting in the middle. He puts the top chair down and steps on top of the other chair and breaks the web. The spider falls and I catch its stringy web. I start to sing Itsy Bitsy Spider in English to impress him, pretending the capture of the ugly creature excites me. Next time, you wait for me. These chairs are wobbly. Had you climbed them, you would have fallen out the window. He claps his hands to get rid of the dust and web. He continues. Then you'll really be in trouble with me. He carries a chair in each hand and brings them downstairs. I think he hit himself because I hear him curse. When I hear his footsteps coming up the stairs again, I start to play with a spider. Okay, he says, play with your spider outside. He motions me to the door. I have a headache. I'm going to rest and I don't want to be disturbed. I nod. He enters his bedroom but pauses by the door. He looks up at the edge of the ceiling, then looks at me. I start for the door, still playing with a spider. I continue to sing Itsy Bitsy Spider, this time in Filipino. Come back here, he says. His voice is stern. The spider tries to climb its stringy web. I shake it like a yo-yo as it nears my finger. I don't look at my father, but I can feel his intent gaze. I almost bump into his tall figure as I pretend to busy myself with a spider. Are you still sick? He asks as he puts his palm on my forehead. You're still warm. Don't stay too long outside. I nod and walk away. At the top of the stairs, I pause and listen as he closes the bedroom door. Going down, I think of my next problem. How to borrow the flashlight my father keeps in his drawer.
That was $50 a Night, written and read by Victoria Martinez. That concludes Life Rattle number 1368. Arnie Ackman recorded Victoria Martinez reading her stories. My name is Virginia Ashbery. Life Rattle is produced from Toronto and was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Ackman.